Well, good morning, everyone. What a nice message from Senator Franken. He has been such a champion for us and really went to bat for us this year and is so deserving of that award. He's a great guy. It is really wonderful to be here with all of you in Fort Worth, and nice to have a little bit of a break from Washington as well. I would like to take a few minutes to reflect on what happened to our industry last year, and then, more important, focus on our vision and our plan for 2015. I don't need to tell you that for most of us in the biodiesel industry, this past year was a difficult one. Even in a city that's becoming synonymous with dysfunction, where hyper-polarized politics and low expectations have become the norm, Washington was a particularly frustrating place. At times, it felt like we were in a bad movie. There was this manufactured suspense from the repeated delays in the RFS volumes. And every time we felt like the ending was coming, the directors threw in an unnecessary plot twist. And we still haven't seen the final credits roll. It really makes no sense. And unlike a weak Hollywood script, Washington's failure to act is creating serious damage in the real world. I've spoken to many of you about the struggles that your businesses faced last year. I know that many of you were forced to cut production and lay off workers. And it hurts me to know that all of this could have been avoided if we had stronger leadership from the Obama administration and Congress. The lack of leadership in Washington is especially disappointing, since strong biodiesel policy is something that the public supports. It also helps our nation create high-quality jobs, provide cleaner air, and reduce our dependence on one global commodity, oil. The best news from last year is that we rose above the script we were given. We stayed unified as an industry. We stayed smart and we stayed proactive. As many other groups in the renewable fuels industry splintered and moved squarely into the crosshairs of powerful critics, we expanded our already solid bipartisan support. In short, we persevered like we always have. And as a result, I believe that we are on stronger footing as we head into 2015. We won a significant victory late in the year in the form of a retroactive and belated 2014 tax incentive. I hope that this is cause for celebration for many of you. I know that we have made tremendous progress with both the EPA and the White House in showing them the originally proposed biodiesel volumes are unacceptable. Their public statements last year made it clear that our advocacy is having an impact. This is a good thing. And even though we begin the year with incredible uncertainty, I am bullish on biodiesel and am convinced that 2015 could be a turning point year for our industry. Your presence here in Fort Worth demonstrates to me that we are a strong, unified industry that is prepared to continue the fight. We need each and every one of you. We have taken charge of writing our own script for this year. We intend to find our way out of the legislative and bureaucratic gridlock and get our industry on more stable ground. Like last year, the two big battles will be for a strong RFS and reinstatement of a longer-term tax incentive. To turn our script into an epic movie, we need a bunch of co-stars. First, I want to acknowledge the great efforts of my team in Washington, as well as Jefferson City, who've been working tirelessly for all of you. As we've been fighting the good fight over the past year, I have personally gained my strength from many of you who have been working with us, helping us hand in hand to help change this tone in Washington. I want to acknowledge and thank all of you who have made a lasting impact on our industry through your advocacy. So what is the plan for this year? It starts with acknowledging and embracing who we are as an industry. You know, we truly are unique. Just look around the room. This is such a diverse coalition of entrepreneurs, farmers, idealists, risk takers, Democrats, Republicans, big city, small town, East, West, and Midwest. The next piece of our plan is to build on our strengths and redouble our efforts on grassroots advocacy, coalition building, and public outreach to continue to make our case louder, clearer, and even more consistently than last year. We do that by strengthening our collective voice, getting more members involved, and empowering you to advocate for yourselves, because we can't do it without you. Our political support has to reflect the broad outreach of this industry, and if it does, we will be successful. We showed this last year when we rallied nearly 50 of you to come to Washington to push for the tax incentive and get it over the finish line. We had more lawmakers than ever from both sides of the aisle weigh in on our case about the RFS, including many who held a Capitol Hill press conference to sound off on the White House and the EPA's initial lowball biodiesel volume proposal. There were many others who met with the White House's top climate advisor to push for stronger biodiesel volumes. We also had thousands of you write letters to the administration and to members of Congress in support of the biodiesel industry. And as we just heard from Senator Franken, we must maintain that kind of pressure consistently throughout the coming year. EPA has said that they want to finalize 2014, 2015, and 2016 volumes all in this 2015 calendar year. Our goal is to help them do that and achieve modest growth in the biomass-based diesel program going forward. You can get started and help today. We have a booth in the expo hall to let you write letters calling on the administration to end this senseless delay and establish a significant volume increase for biodiesel under the RFS immediately. We urge you to stop by the booth and sign the letter. NBB can and will provide powerful messaging, smart strategy, and relentless behind-the-scenes execution and planning. But ultimately, if we are to overcome the inertia in Washington and move forward as an industry, we must have even more engagement from this great, diverse audience. We must stay unified, focused, and above all, energized. If we do that, our new script for 2015 will take shape, propel us forward, and be a blockbuster hit. Thank you, and I look forward to working with all of you this year. Well, last year I had the pleasure of hosting a dynamic panel whose expertise has been invaluable on our fight in Capitol Hill. And they continue to bring unmatched insight and wisdom into our daily grind. So when we talked about it this year, it made sense to tap into their expertise again. Our first panelist is a senior policy advisor, author, professor, and former senator from North Dakota. Among his many advocacy roles, he is a senior fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center, where he co-chairs the center's energy project and focuses on energy policy. Please welcome Byron Dorgan. Our other panelist serves as vice chair for public policy at Polsinelli and is a former congressman from Missouri. Throughout a distinguished career, he has served as a leading expert and advocate in energy policy. As a legislator, he championed biofuels initiatives and is a founding member of the Missouri Energy Initiative. Please welcome Kenny Holsoff. Well, good morning. Thank you again for joining us. This is always one of my favorite parts of our program. I think it's such a great opportunity for our audience to engage with two of our leading advocates and ask the pressing questions of the day, and hopefully you guys will have some insight and wisdom, thank you, as to how things may go for this coming year for us. It's certainly a very exciting year that we have ahead of us. If you guys notice on the screen, there is an ability for everyone to text in questions that you have. So please text in your burning questions, and we'll bring them up to the stage and ask our leading experts here and field a few of your questions in the next couple of minutes. So again, thank you guys very much. So it probably makes sense to start off with the burning question of the day that's on everyone's mind, and that is, How is it that we are in 2015 and we still haven't received our 2014 volume obligations under the RFS? I mean, it's something that we scratch our heads about every day. So what do you guys think? How do you think we got in this position, and how do we find ourselves out of it? Senator Dorgan, do you want to start?
Seniority.
Well, it suggests to me that there is not a minimum threshold of embarrassment. This is really pretty unbelievable. You know, I helped write the Renewable Fuel Standard in 2005 and then again in 2007. And we did it for a very specific reason. And then the current president even campaigned on it, was involved in the biodiesel piece in 2007. It's inexplicable to me that they can't make decisions we would have expected them to make, especially with a program that should be celebrating success. You know, we celebrate success, you celebrate it, because you know what you've done in building this industry. We need the White House to join in celebrating that success, and also those in Congress to say, let's do Made in America, fuel diversity, lower carbon, and something that's renewable that will strengthen this country. So the simple answer to your question is, I think none of us would have predicted they would go through the entire year, even being pushed by all of us, and still not seemed embarrassed about having missed deadline after deadline after deadline. But the key point is, we can't quit. You know, for those of you who are Seahawk fans, I don't use football metaphors often, but for those of you who are Seahawk fans, you understand that you never quit, because at the end, if you keep pushing and your cause is right, you win.
You know, there is bipartisan agreement in the halls of Congress that uncertainty in the marketplace is a bad thing, wreaks havoc upon any industry. And yet, inertia and the status quo are powerful forces in Washington, D.C. And there's plenty of blame to go around. You know, as far as on the congressional side, you know, the tax incentive, letting it expire, trying to make it retroactive, that's not the way that it certainly is harmful to the industry. You mentioned the White House, the administration, EPA. You know, first of all, I'm convinced, Ann, that the 1.28 number, the proposed rule, would have been the final rule but for those of you that are sitting in these chairs, those that you represent back home, those of you wearing the red shirts, the team, those that have graced the stage. I mean, we would have had that horrific number but for everyone rowing together. But we are now in this situation. Great word, inexplicable. That's a quarter word, you know, in Missouri. But I would say dereliction, abdication, equivocation, frustration. I mean, pick your word. It's been a challenge, especially, and not to be political or partisan here, but you know, last night's speech. You know, I applauded the discussion about climate change, and again, the president focusing on energy and greenhouse gas. Well, then it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Just give us a number that is an appropriate number for the industry. We're getting close.
Yes. Every time people ask when it's going to come out, I throw out a new date. So I do hope we're getting close, and I do believe we are. And the reason we have changed is because of everybody's involvement and engagement. Kenny, you mentioned Congress. There's been a little bit of a shakeup in Congress, and the Republicans have now taken over the Senate, and they also control the House. How do you all see that playing in terms of an RFS reform? We heard a lot of chatter about it last year. Do we think that there's actually going to be any action on that, or is that going to be more rhetoric? How do we see that playing out?
You know, I think, whether it's the RFS specifically, I think, again, inertia, the politics, the dynamics are different. A couple of years ago, obviously, when we had a shortfall as far as the corn crop and ethanol and the politics of all of that, now that we've had a record crop of corn, you know, ethanol, it's less, at least the noise level is down a little bit. I will say this, as you mentioned, the movement of Republicans now controlling the Senate along with the House. The jury is still out as it relates to renewable energy. Still, politics of energy are regional in scope. And so that's why you have, you know, Senator Franken, for instance, or you have Senator Grassley of Iowa, who's a big wind proponent, a big biofuels proponent. You've got Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia in a coal-producing state, and he's for coal. And so, again, you know, it still is very regional in scope, which, again, makes our effort all the more important that we have to continue to reach out to those that within our sphere of influence and those constituents, making sure that you advocate on our behalf, the industry's behalf, with your elected representatives.
You know, it is true that energy is regional in scope, and you'll see that the way they arrange themselves in the House and the Senate from various regions. But the RFS is national in scope. It is clearly national in scope. We determined that we want to get off this roller coaster ride that the Saudis have us on with the free ticket, and we want diversity in fuel. We want made in America fuel. We want lower carbon fuel. All the things that biodiesel produces. Now, it's really interesting to me. We'll probably talk about the price of oil today, because you can't talk about energy without talking about what's happened to oil and how it impacts everything else. But this morning, Saudi Arabia would have the capability of making a decision this morning that would push the price of oil to $20 a barrel, or a decision that could push it to $120 a barrel. They could just make a judgment to do that. And that's why I describe us riding on this roller coaster the Saudis have created, and why there's a national and purpose policy of producing renewable fuels, biodiesel especially, as the first commercial advanced fuel, to try to help get us off of that roller coaster. So, again, I don't know why I used inexplicable even, but it is... I was, you know, I'm kind of, when you talk about not being able to project when the administration is going to come out with its answer, I'm kind of like the guy on Wall Street that has predicted 10 of the last two recessions. You know, all year I kept expecting that this administration would do what it is required and what it is supposed to do in this country's interest. And it's clearly in our interest to continue down this road of growing, not shrinking, a biodiesel industry.
To follow up that point, and let me focus on my Republican colleagues for a second and on Capitol Hill, there are a number of new faces in Washington. And often you will hear, while they'll give lip service to the all-of-the-above energy strategy, we should do it all, and yet in the same breath we'll say, but Congress should not pick winners and losers, let the market decide. Well, that would be great, but as you know, Joe Job and I have often said in various speeches, Adam Smith from Wealth Ovations, Adam Smith left the building long ago as it related to energy policy, and Byron Dorgan has explained exactly that we don't have a free market as it relates to transportation fuel. And no more than I would take, scoop up my IRAs and retirement income, because I'm kind of getting up in your area as far as age. No more than I would scoop that up and head to the casino and put it on red or black with one roll of the dice or one flip of the wheel. Why would we as a nation focus all of our energy or focus priority on one transportation fuel? We have to have this diversified portfolio. Biodiesel has to be in the mix.
Well, we just talked a little bit about oil and the price of oil. And, you know, as we continue to try to diversify and press that message, what is a message that we as the biodiesel industry can be telling? Or how do we say, we understand the price of oil is low, but you can't think that it's going to be low forever. How do we continue to get that message across? How does that low price of oil kind of play into the whole view on renewables? Are people thinking less about renewables, or are they still thinking about it, or how do we continue to make our case on that front?
In terms of renewable fuels, it doesn't matter what the price of oil is with respect to our determination to change our future and to alter our future in a better way. I mean, the very fact that the price of oil has gone from $117 a barrel the previous June to, I think now it's 45 or somewhere in the 40s, and may go lower. A couple investment banks last week suggested 35 is probably the area. The very fact that this has happened tells us why we need diversity of fuels. And, you know, the other thing is I watched the president's speech last evening. He talks a lot about climate change. Well, if you talk about climate change, you must take a look at the determination to create renewable fuels that have a much lower carbon output. And you must then support biodiesel. And by the way, I'm a friend of the president's. I served with him in the Congress. I like him. I voted for him. And I think he's had a struggle in many areas. He's had determined opposition in the Congress by people who decided, you know, their number one objective was for him to fail. So it's not been easy for him. But you know what? He's made it hard for himself as well by messing around with these kind of decisions. There's no need to dither on the question of whether you want to grow the biodiesel industry. This president campaigned on it, and this president needs to meet that objective.
Amen.
Just a reminder to folks, if you guys do have questions, they should pop the number up on the screen. Please feel free to text those questions, and we'd be happy to field them with our experts here. Some questions we just got. Why does it seem like many Republicans struggle with supporting biofuels?
I'll take that
okay.
one.
And then I'll help you.
Yeah. Last night when the president quipped that he had won, he's not standing for re-election, and smattering of applause with in the hall of the House last night, but then he quickly came back and said, that he'd won both of his elections. And yet, the Republican majority has grown both in the House and in the Senate. And I think those Republican members that come from districts like the one I used to represent, agricultural. I happen to be a owner and operator of a 1,000-acre row crop farm in southeast Missouri, and so understanding agriculture, understanding soybeans, but now as the biodiesel industry has grown, the great different feedstocks now that are available, I think those members of Congress that represent you, those Republican members will get it so long as they hear from you and understand your industry, from your perspective. Again, keep in mind the power that you have is the power of the vote. And the only way that these Republicans or Democrats can continue to represent you is if you let them, if you endorse them, if you invest your vote in them or for them. The challenge, though, is when you get, some of the hardliners or maybe the very conservative members, again, who sort of say that we shouldn't pick winners and losers or letting the market decide, or that tough word mandate. The RFS, at the time in 05 and expanded it in 07 when you and I were both still walking the halls. By the way, we didn't have this problem with biodiesel back when you and I were still in office.
That's
anyway,
right.
But the fact that, that this the renewable fuel standard is seen as a mandate from Washington, D.C., and so that's the challenge of educating these new members about the industry itself, about the effects of it, and the larger implications, again, of focusing or allowing ourselves to be subject to the whims of, some Saudi sheik.
Well, let me fill in the text just a little bit. I think that going back to 1916, when our government said, we want you to go look for oil and gas. We just want you to do that. That's a national purpose. So you do that, and we say, God bless you, and we'll give you a tax break, give you some generous tax provisions. And we did. And so for 100 years, almost, we've done that. We've given them tax concessions, and we wanted them to find oil and gas, and they did. So good for them. But when it came to other forms of energy, renewable fuels, about 1992, we said, we want to encourage you to do some of that as well. And it's been stutter, stop, start, off, on again. You could never count on it. It's kind of a narrow tax provision that goes off and expires. And the other thing I've watched is there are some people who come to Congress, and it perhaps it's more on your side, well, almost certainly it's more on your side, Kenny, who believe, energy. Real men dig and drill. Real men dig and drill. The rest of you, renewables, sun and wind and renewable fuels and ethanol and biodiesel, that stuff is pushed by people that have a corduroy jacket and drink Chardonnay and drive a Volvo and teach at some university. God bless them. They won't cause us any major harm. Let them do their thing, but it's not real. I mean, that's kind of how people see this other form of energy. Real men dig and drill. The rest of you are trying to do something that will never matter much for America, which is just not true. we're starting to see significant opportunities come from other forms of energy. And in this specific area of biodiesel, it has so much to commend it, not just to the administration, but to conservatives and liberals and every member of Congress. This is made in America. This is not only made in America, it's also helping the planet. You know, one more thing. So there's going to be about 270,000 people born today on Wednesday. About 110,000 people will die today. So that means that we're going to add the equivalent of about a Dallas, Texas every week to the planet, 75 to 80 million people. They're going to want to drive cars. They're going to want refrigerators and air conditioners, right? Prodigious energy users in this planet. So that's why we have to be about looking for new ways to produce energy that makes us stronger and protects our planet at the same time. That's why I've said before, this is a really good news story. And those of you in this room are the ones who've helped build it and lift it.
That's very well said, Senator. Absolutely. One of the things you mentioned was tax credits, and obviously we have our biodiesel tax incentive that unfortunately was reinstated and then expired about 2 weeks later. So now we're in the position of trying to get our tax incentive back again. One of the questions from the audience was, does the low price of oil decrease or increase the potential for tax credits? And how do we see the outlook for tax this year? Are we going to be doing tax reform? Are we going to be doing another extenders bill? How does that all kind of play into our future?
Go ahead. I'll just quickly say there will be an extenders bill. It likely will be later rather than earlier in the year, unfortunately. And tax reform is really, really very hard to do. I helped write the 1986 tax reform bill. I was a member of the Ways and Means Committee when we wrote that. That's the last major reform. It's really hard to do. Ronald Reagan was president, a strong Ways and Means Committee chair. We had bipartisan support, and even then, almost didn't get it done. So my view is we probably will not have major tax reform this year. There may be some tax reform, and it's very likely that the extenders would travel with whatever tax reform happens when it happens.
I concur. In fact, interestingly, back in 1986, you had a front row view of that. Senator Bob Packwood of Oregon, who was the Republican Senate Finance Chairman, was campaigning that year and actually campaigned. His reelection theme was, we are going to do tax reform. In other words, getting it done was seen by the senator in his reelect as something that was positive. Well, I fancy that would be quite difficult in today's environment in an election year, getting something significant like tax reform done. I will say this, that unfortunately, you know, I'm a great believer, as we all are, that, you know, making the tax code simpler or fairer is something, you know, that would be good for all of us. But I think, you know, in the 86 bill, you all were actually talking about bringing down rates on the top income earners. The president, the day before the State of the Union, said we should ratchet that back up. And so I think politically, it's just going to be a very heavy lift for this president and Republican Congress to do fundamental tax reform. What that means is exactly what the senator has said, and that is that the biodiesel tax incentive, along with about 70-plus other temporary provisions, will have to be continued to be discussed. I would like to say that we would have some certainty as far as a two-year extension so that, you know, that we wouldn't have to keep doing this look back. By the way, and the message we carried on your behalf to Capitol Hill, you know, this is, as you know from the tax incentive, this is not like an income tax credit. That it's not that big of a deal to do the look back and make it retroactive. Obviously, the way that the biodiesel tax incentive is put into place, that's not, I mean, the market might consider that along the way, that maybe there will be an extension. So I would love to tell you that there's going to be a two-year extension, except that it's likely to do this this one-year add-on each time. Probably, if you're interested in tax reform, I think the president's speech last night has probably set the stage for the presidential election. I think fundamental tax reform is going to be one of those issues that the Republican not candidates you already selected your nominee on the Democratic side, haven't you, Senator? Anyway.
I assume that's rhetorical.
I do think that tax reform will continue to be discussed, but Again, just the nuts and bolts of this is that we're likely to have these extensions. We'll have to continue bringing you to Washington and helping advocate for our cause to keep the biodiesel tax incentive intact.
It sounds like we've got more work ahead of us.
We do.
Another question we got from the audience, which is something that I think that we think about a lot in D.C., is what opportunities are there to collaborate with other alternative fuel groups to promote fuel diversity? Obviously, we're in the RFS, and there's other fuel groups that are in the RFS, too, but there's a lot of other alternative groups. What can we do? How do we build our coalitions? How do we do kind of this team-building type thing to propel us all forward?
Well, I know you're not asking that question to solicit a compliment, but I want to tell you, sitting in the desk in the House for 12 years, in the Senate for 18 years, I've had a lot of people come to my office and make presentations and ask me to support various things, as you did, Kenny. But I really think the biodiesel organization with Stephen and Joe, and especially with your team. I mean, your team in Washington, we've had the opportunity to work a fair amount together. You have an extraordinary team, and they're already reaching out, collaborating with a lot of interests in Washington, D.C., to try to gain strength through that collaboration. So, I just think you've put together a strong team, and we're going to get across the finish line. It's very frustrating, but we're going to get there just because this issue is so right for our country. And my hope is after the next presidential election, between now and then, we need to get, the RFS squared away, get the taxing squared away, and then I'm going to watch all 9 debates with your 25 candidates. And by the way, just for no reason except that Kenny mentioned that, I just wanted to say I've been out there as a Democrat advocating that what they need to do for their ticket is to make it a Donald Trump, Sarah Palin ticket. I think that would go really well. And then we're going to select our candidates as well, and then we'll see what happens. But most important, I think what we want from both political parties is some seriousness of purpose about how you do what's right for the country. And this issue is not the biggest issue in the world. It's very big if you're invested in a plant someplace and can't get an answer. But it's big for the country as well, and we hope whoever this president in the final part of his term and whoever the new president is, Republican or Democrat and members of Congress, will finally understand that they shouldn't keep people who are building and expanding at the end of a string. Give them certainty, as Kenny said when he started. Certainty and predictability to say, this country is with you because you're doing something that invests in America's future.
Great. My greatest frustration as a recovering politician going through the 12-step program is I'm stuck on step number 8, which is forgiving your enemies, but that's another side. It is that we are in an era of bumper sticker campaigning. Soundbite politics. And so just like the gentleman that's seated next to me, who I have great respect for, have come to know and work with on these issues, we need people that are looking at the large picture, who articulate a vision. So to your question, we know that, and this team that Ann has, and those of you that assist, we punch above our weight. When you consider who's on the other side of these fights and the deep-pocketed money interests that we're taking on, and yet we are still in the ball game, even though the EPA was getting ready to cut us off at the knees at 1.28 billion gallons, and yet we are still in the game, and we are still going to pursue this, but we have to have your help. And not to single out, because I didn't get permission from him last night when I met him, but there's one of your number here as far as building teams and partners. That deals a lot with over-the-road truckers because of the business that they have, and they have used their considerable influence with their home state, now Senator James Lankford. When Congressman Lankford convened an oversight hearing last week, he had the script that we would have written for him because of that personal advocacy. And I love that advocacy effort, not to sort of tip off the company. But the fact is that you all have to help us. I mean, the only way that we can continue to stay in the game is this broad-based coalition that you've put together, that we continue to build out. These aren't the days, and I'm a proud soybean farmer, but in the old days when we just basically soybean growers, but now we've built that team to include a number of interests that are here represented. Thank you for that. Thank you for what you've done, but more importantly, thank you for what you're going to continue to do so that we can make this industry be successful.
Well, thank you guys so much. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I hope you all had an opportunity to get a little window into my world and all the expertise that I receive. And I always say this is my dream team, and I'm so lucky to have you all as a part of our team. And thank you so much for joining us today and inspiring our audience and our membership to get out there and get involved and do the grassroots advocacy, because as we all know, at the end of the day, that's the impetus and the push that we need to get us across the finish line. So thank you guys again. I very much appreciate it.
Well, and thanks for your leadership.
Thank you.